All right, welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, and I'm joined by Meredith, a forest defender who is working to protect a forest on Green Diamond property near Trinidad. Is that right?
That's right, Tom.
So there is an active tree sit, and folks are out in the woods.
It's a well-balanced life, the life of a forest defender. We really have a great crew of people who hold down all of the tree sits or multiple tree sits through actually two different Green Diamond timber harvest plans right now. And we're able to find good balance with that. So yeah, I'm in the region.
Yeah, you're part of the support cast. And, you know, a tree sit will always need a support team because you need to get food up to those people. You know, you can't really be self-sufficient at the top of a redwood.
Definitely.
So multiple different Green Diamond THPs, multiple different tree sits. What's going on in Green Diamond land that is causing y'all to be out there?
Yeah, Green Diamond Resource Company is a national corporation. They own land, timberland in Washington, Oregon, California, and Georgia. And in Northern California in particular, they own more than 373,000 acres, most of which is within 20 miles of the sensitive Pacific coastline. And Green Diamond's main timber harvest technique is clear cutting. And clear cutting is when you cut down all of the trees within a given site. I really want to point out that the forest is a very particular type of ecological structure, and clear cutting it ruins that structure. It's really easy to see that. But Green Diamond Resource Company is certified sustainable by two different agencies, and we really disagree with their forest practices because it destroys the ecosystem. In one of the timber harvest plans near so-called Trinidad, it's a small timber harvest plan. There's only one unit. Usually timber harvest plans are broken up into multiple units. This is just one unit. It's about 40 and a half acres and almost entirely within the protection zone of two osprey nests. Those species are given about a quarter mile buffer zone. So they want to clear cut almost the entirety of that buffer zone that the THP falls within.
So right to the edge of that quarter mile.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's one. And then you said that there was another THP. What's going on there?
Yeah, that THP, Forest Defenders.
THP, Timber Harvest Plan. I often get into this lingo, and I don't know if folks are intimately familiar, like you and I are, with the Forest Practice Act language. So Timber Harvest Plan, that's the permit that they need to receive from Cal Fire, the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, to be able to do this logging. So the second THP, we have one that is near occupied osprey nests, which is concerning. What's the second THP?
The second THP has been defended by Forest Defenders since the beginning of April. We put a tree sit up April 1st, which isn't a joke. And that is a timber harvest plan that was essentially renewed after its expiration and had been within close proximity to Strawberry Rock and was also defended by Forest Defenders since 2012, 2014, and was successful in then giving the space, not allowing Green Diamond to log and being able to create an agreement or working agreement with the Trinidad Coastal Land Trust to protect that area. And so what Forest Defenders are protecting now is the remaining area that is left unprotected by the Trinidad Coastal Land Trust. Green Diamond contracted loggers have logged some of Unit A, and there are tree sits all along the edge of that clear cut. But I'm glad that you brought up in your description of THP and timber harvest plan and sort of the lingo that, you know, you brought up Cal Fire and California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And in the announcement of the newest tree sits protecting this area in the Osprey Forest, we've written an open letter to Green Diamond, as well as to Cal Fire, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the other certifying agencies, so Forest Stewardship Council and the Sustainable Forestry Initiative, SFI, all these acronyms, And they're all complicit in the destruction of wildlife. And now is the time to realize the value of these forests and restore them rather than allowing for their degradation. It's amazing the amount of science that all of these organizations and corporations ignore, particularly in terms of clear cut, not even talking about climate change and the sixth mass extinction where species are dying off. Green Diamond is tangentially involved in a lawsuit brought by EPIC against the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, where CDFW granted a permit. Maybe you can talk more about this, Tom. I think you know about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll jump in since this is something that EPIC is litigating. So we are bringing a lawsuit against the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, like you said, for the issuance of a safe harbor agreement permit, which you accurately described is a permit that would allow the taking of Humboldt martens. Humboldt martens are one of our rarest forest denizens. There are less than 200 left in our state, and there are so few of them that we actually thought that they were extinct until 1996 when they were rediscovered in Six Rivers National Forest in Del Norte County, kind of right at the border of Siskiyou County. And so Green Diamond's lands are critically important to the recovery of the Humboldt Martin because we want to be able to connect high-value blocks of habitat for them, and Green Diamond's lands largely lie in the way. And Green Diamond's forestry practices, as you said, clear cutting, is inconsistent with successful Martin habitat corridors. So to be able to get the two areas connected, we need to see a change in Green Diamond's ownership. And CDFW issued a permit to Green Diamond that would make this management more difficult and issued it against the objections of their own internal scientists. So from our view, it was a politically driven permit. So, you know, we often complain about the Trump administration and their hijacking of science and hijacking of federal agencies and the, you know, the swampy atmosphere of the Trump administration, to use their own language. It's here in California, too. You know, we are not immune to it in California, and hopefully this litigation will drain the swamp at CDFW and restore the proper role of science in land management decisions. Yeah, so, wow, geez, that was a tangent. Sorry, I'm supposed to be interviewing you. So you have multiple tree sits up. And so this is a fairly... aggressive is not the right word, because aggressive seems to imply violence, and this is not a violent form of activism. This is clearly in line with America's long tradition of nonviolent civil disobedience, but it is aggressive in the sense that it is not something that you see every day. It is something that puts the tree sitters at risk, as we've seen previously with other tree sits. People have nearly been killed by falling trees and by cops and private security thugs. So why a tree sit? Why this form of protest or this form of civil disobedience?
Yeah, tree sits and many other tactics used with direct action, with nonviolent civil disobedience, really elevates human life and the way that we prioritize human life. And so folks putting themselves 100 feet up into a tree and tying a bunch of trees in and making traverses, so lines that go between trees that folks are able to climb on. Loggers aren't able to come in and cut trees within that area at all. They would severely hurt or kill the human life that's there. And that's one of the tactics with it. And I think the heart of it is really, we see, as you described so clearly in the description with the Humboldt Martin, is that, you know, there are so many forces against us as citizens that don't provide us with the agency that we need to take care of the environment and the communities that we live in. You know, Green Diamond and California Department of Fish and Wildlife collaborate on the destruction of the habitat of the Humboldt Martin. And we disagree with that. And so we as individuals, I want to encourage everyone as individuals to be able to speak up, rise up, and put their bodies in the way of situations that they don't agree with, that are entirely unjust. I may not be a scientist, but I know that clear cutting is devastating. And I wish that we prioritized, you know, the life of the Humboldt Martin. And there are these amazing creatures, the giant Pacific salamander, who are out there, and they're nocturnal. They come out at night, and they live for 20 to 30 years if given the chance and the right environment to. And so, though I'm not a scientist, I really disagree with what I'm able to very clearly observe as an individual of the destruction of the environment, and also being well aware of what's happening in the greater world with climate change and the displacement of peoples and animals all over the planet, and the way that our country and our society is very much complicit in the destruction of those, as receiving materials and goods from the global south and living in the global north, really being able to benefit from that. And so I think the tree sitting and the direct action is, as you said, is like a long standing part of our culture here, particularly in Northern California, as seen beginning with the indigenous folks and the way that they worked to protect their land when colonizers came. And then in, you know, again, in the 90s with other environmentalists joining those efforts and really beginning to tree sit and say no to the destruction of the forest for corporate profit.
So you reference a bit the long history that we have here on the North Coast of this form of civil disobedience. You know, we have had an active forest defense movement since the mid-80s, I believe, was when we had the establishment of our first local Earth First chapter by Daryl Cherney and others. And really, the forest defense movement has been inspired by previous civil rights movements and other movements. So we're in this weird and interesting time, right? The George Floyd murder and the subsequent protests, has that civil unrest, civil disobedience related to police reform or police abolition, has that been inspiring? Has that made you kind of rethink or think about your work in a different way at all?
Every day. I mean, you know, there's so much that I, as an individual, continue to learn of how to be in better relation and to fight for justice and to align myself and ourselves with everyone who is out there defending the forest to the broader social justice movement and climate justice movement. We are really passionate about protecting the forest. A number of us are white identified, and so we live with the number of privileges that allow us to be safer in confrontations with cops than Black bodies and Indigenous bodies are. And so being a forest defender definitely involves a certain amount of privilege in some ways. And that's not, you know, that's not across the board, but, you know, there is this motivation of like the role that we're taking still feels really important, where, you know, we're having conversations about decolonization, that, you know, Green Diamond, who purchased this land in 1948 under the company name Simpson Logging, they started profiting from clear-cutting the ancestral lands of Indigenous people in Washington, and they still profit from the legacy of genocide in Northern California. It's something that we find really important to be advocating for, of noting just whose land it is.
Yeah, I noticed at the very beginning you said that the tree sit was near this town, or the so-called town of Trinidad, which reflects that this land wasn't unoccupied at some point. It had other names at one point, and European Americans came in and dispossessed people of their land and renamed it and took it over and started to cut it down.
Yeah, and so, you know, and I think that's like as the George Floyd protests occur and like, and communities talk about abolishing the police, the same goes for unsettling the land and giving the land back to Indigenous people. This is all, for many, you know, for white identified people, for settlers, is a very new narrative. And I think that that's such a huge part of the work, is, you know, working to introduce that narrative and let people know there is a marker for the Shirai village in Trinidad, and, you know, just its language of how it was, you know, this area was discovered by a Euro-American, you know, for the first time. It's erasure, and it's not great, and it's not the kind of culture that I want to be living in. I don't want to live in a culture where we can acknowledge the harm that we've caused and work towards healing. And that's what we're really calling on Green Diamond to do, is to acknowledge that before colonization, old growth redwoods stretched across 2 million acres of coastal California. And now a tiny fraction of that is protected in national and state parks. And the vast majority of it has been converted into tree plantations. And Green Diamond's management scheme, which is clear cutting every 45 years, is creating an ecological dystopia, and that we need to allow these forests to grow into the next generation of old growth habitat, as well as Green Diamond to be acknowledging the ways that they've profited off of indigenous land, and to be among our demands in this open letter is for Green Diamond to pay annual reparations forever to local indigenous tribes and be willing to offer any land within the tribe's ancestral territories upon their request for reacquisition. So, and I don't think the tribe should have to pay for it, but you know, they can all figure that out. This isn't, you know, we're just trying to like advocate up to a point that like, and pressure Green Diamond, you know, into doing better. And that's really all we want, because they're not doing a good job. They're not responsibly managing the forest.
Yeah, absolutely. You're listening to the Eco News Report, and Meredith from Redwood Forest Defense is joining us to talk about their ongoing tree sits on Green Diamond property near the town of Trinidad. So Meredith, have you been up in a tree sit before? Have you been, you know, on the platforms spending the night lashed to a branch?
Yeah, I haven't spent the night because I have some canine responsibilities.
Sure.
Sort of going on. But I have done a considerable amount of sitting up in trees, and it's incredible. And, you know, these spaces are really unique. It's really funny to be a human as like very much a generally ground-based species, sort of trying to figure out how to live arboreally along with the other creatures up there who definitely make themselves known, like the flying squirrels, you know. And that's the whole thing with clear cutting, is there's a whole ecosystem just up in the canopy.
Yeah. So you get to see a different world than we ever get to experience, right? So you go up 100 feet in a tree and you'll see that there are huckleberries growing out of a tree. Yeah. And there are species that live their entire lives in the canopy that never may see the forest floor. If they see the forest floor, it's because they're dead.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So tell us a little bit about, like, what is the experience like of being 100 feet up? Because I imagine a lot of listeners have seen, you know, pictures of Julia Butterfly Hill in a tree and have imagined themselves 100 feet up. But like, how do you get up? What is it like to be up so high? Are you swaying in the wind? Yeah, just describe the physical feeling of being up there, and what are you seeing from the top of a tree?
Yeah, so the technical aspects of it are, we use a combination of rock climbing and arborist climb gear. And so there's a climb line that's being set in the tree that then folks are ascending upon. They climb for a while. I'm pretty slow, so it takes me a little while to get up to a platform that's, you know, probably at least 50 feet up to, in some of the bigger redwoods, you know, 100 or so feet up. And generally you're met by either a platform, which would be made out of plywood or a combination of reclaimed woods, that is rigged in the tree. And everything's padded, so the tree itself and like the bark is protected from any kind of rubbing from the platform. There's also some nets that are woven amongst the branches. And so you're sitting up there, and in the redwood forest, as most people know, it's pretty cool. Like, it's shady. It has a really dense canopy. I think on average, you know, a complete intact forest is, you know, about 71% canopy coverage. Like, it's pretty dense, right? And so generally it like stays pretty cool, and you're up in the trees and you see the huckleberry bushes, and there are probably some snags around you. And there's all sorts of different, you know, structures of trees that creatures will be living in, snags and stumps. So those big burned out pillars that we see when we walk through, you know, even previously clear cut redwood forests. Trees are really diverse up at the top. Some of them have broken top crowns or dead tops or half crowns or sparse crowns. There's all these different words for them. And there'll be, you know, different fire blackened scars and barks and different limbs and reiterations. So like a tree, like a tall redwood would be having a branch that comes out laterally, and then a reiteration would be, you know, the seeming tree growing off of that limb. And it's just epic. And sometimes the limbs themselves are growing together because they're so complex or they've been so weather scarred. And you always feel the wind move the tree. So there's sort of this like seasickness that maybe some people get after a little while.
Yeah, is it like being on a boat, right? You're kind of always moving.
Yeah, to sort of the unpredictable cadence of wind, a little less consistent than, you know, at least a storm turned sea would be. And yeah, it was really epic. And it's, you know, we're in action mode every time we're out in the woods because we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how Green Diamond is going to, you know, change their intents to react, you know, as we're learning through the George Floyd protests and having conversations about abolishing police forces. We don't know how, you know, the cops are going to react. And we know that they react violently a lot of the time, as has been seen with the campaign to protect the Matol.
Yeah. So what is Green Diamond's response like so far? Have they been accepting that there are people up in trees? They have to be used to this, given that there have been tree sits in and around Strawberry Rock since, what, 2012, did you say?
Yeah, since 2012. Green Diamond has been pretty hands-off. They've communicated to us that they're not interested in calling the cops or in extracting people from tree sits during COVID-19. They've made a few visits, one of which some of the security tried to grab and hassle folks who were on the ground. But otherwise, they've been pretty, you know, they've been pretty hands off. And we're actually having a meeting with them coming up soon, which should be interesting. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it continues to unfold. But being in a tree is like, you know, it really feels safe. And so, you know, I always bring a book or the life history of Malcolm X or other sorts of readings that we should all be doing about how to be better white people, or among other topics.
Right. And so being a better white person, speaking of that, and one of the tree sits, we talked a little bit about Strawberry Rock, but we haven't touched on the importance of Strawberry Rock to the Yurok people. And one of the motivating factors behind that tree sit, which is to help defend a culturally sacred site. Can you talk a little bit more about why that tree sit and what is the value of Strawberry Rock?
Yeah, it's our understanding that Strawberry Rock is of cultural significance to the Yurok tribe, and the limits of the tree sit are within the Shirai village, and the Shirai are a member of the Yurok tribe. And so we acknowledge that there are forces such as Green Diamond that look to merely extract and profit. And we know that Green Diamond has a relationship with the Yurok tribe.
Yeah, so don't worry. I mean, it's hard because it's not our land, and we're trying to be good allies.
And an aspect of being a good ally would be, you know, to develop a relationship and like be working on the tribe's behest. And we're definitely, you know, we're aligned to the voices of the Shurai, and you know, are working as much as we can to be conscious of the settler dynamics that are in place and the way that we can work to educate others and to nonviolently resist what we see as something that is harmful, not only to the indigenous folks in the area, but is also like acknowledging of other biomes in the world too.
Yeah, so you have an open letter, which hopefully we'll be able to get on the Lost Coast Outpost. So go to the Lost Coast Outpost and click on the blog post for this, and we'll put it in the show notes. Yeah. So what's next? You say you have a meeting coming up with Green Diamond, and hopefully they will make some management changes. Do you anticipate this tree sit going on throughout the life of the THP if they don't make changes?
Oh yeah, that's the whole thing is direct action being classified as us holding and amplifying our own power and being able to stop things that we deem as unjust. And though we're asking for Green Diamond to assert power in canceling these timber harvest plans, you know, capitalism is really strong. And so we don't necessarily expect that to happen, though we really hope it will. But yeah, we will be resisting their clear cutting until these timber harvest plans expire, for sure.
And that's years, right? So that
that's years.
It's a long-term commitment, you know?
Yeah, totally. But I mean, so, you know, climate change is going to happen. And what, you know, I ask myself, like, what can I do? You know, and this is a small part, but I got to tell you, this forest in the Osprey Forest is incredible. There are trees in there that, you know, it's Humboldt Martin wildlife, this one little component of it, this little corner, especially around some of the creeks and the waterways. There's, you know, trees that are up to 7 feet in diameter. They all have the complex crowns. Like, it feels like a forest, though it is second growth, is on its way to recovery and on its way to being old growth. And what Green Diamond wants to do is to clear cut it and introduce invasive non-native species. You know, in the clear cuts that they have done to the north and east of this area, you can't even get through because there's so much pampas grass. Like, it's hot and it's dry. Yeah. So this forest in particular is super beautiful and is something that, you know, we need to be thinking about future generations, not only of humans, but of animals too, and making sure that we're preserving and restoring habitat. And we think that is the work that, if Green Diamond wants to be a responsible, or claims themselves to be a responsible land manager in the area, and the fact that their responsibility is huge with how much land that they do own in Northern California, they need to turn to restoration and no longer to extraction. And that's really what we're calling for.
Great. So if there are folks out there in the listening audience who want to support the Forest Defenders here, both to change land management practices and to, you know, keep y'all fed, what can they do?
We have a website, redwoodforestdefense.org, and from there they can learn a little bit more about the history of the area and the history of the campaign in Green Diamond. We're adding more things about its unique ecology to it and the plants and animals of why this space should be protected, as well as finding ways to contact us to help us eat. And also, if folks want to be sitting in trees, you know, like you said, it's a long commitment for, you know, the big group of us, but we're also, you know, wanting to really build towards the movement and get people the experience they need to help resist in their backyards. And if so-called Trinidad is in your backyard, we'd love to just, you know, develop a relationship with you and have you buy. And if you want to start to do that regularly, that'd be super awesome. We'd love to build that. So
great. Well, thank you so much, Meredith. Again, redwoodforestdefense.org is the website, and check out the blog post to find a copy of the open letter to Green Diamond. So thank you so much. Stay safe out there. And I appreciate what you do.
Thank you, Tom.
All right. Have a good one.
You too.
Bye. All right, this has been another episode of the Eco News Report. Thank you for listening. If you have any topics you'd like covered in a future episode, give me an email at tom@wildcalifornia.org. And join us next week on this time and channel for more environmental news from the North Coast of California.